Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Ringside Wrap, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we bring you the latest news and information on major pro wrestling and MMA promotions, the occasional history lesson, and interviews with legends of yesterday and stars of today. And now the GWH Radio Network presents Ringside Wrap.
Welcome again, everyone. It's Wednesday night, February 22nd, 2012, and I'd like to welcome you to Ringside Wrap. I am Mike Sempervivi, joined, as always, by Les Thatcher. And later on, Mike Mooneyham is going to join us at about 9 o'clock, and then about 9:15, Adam Pearce, the NWA World Heavyweight Champion, is going to join us as well. And Les, how are you? I didn't talk to you last week when we talked to Mac McMurray, but hope everything was well last week for you.
Yeah, good. How about yourself, Mike?
Nay, no complaints. At least no major complaints, at the very least. Judging from the train wreck of men on Monday night and, well, Sunday night as well in the Elimination Chamber, but especially on Monday night, I'm not doing too bad.
All right, well, you know, that's pretty much consensus of opinion, right?
I wanted to ask you about the Monday night, as probably everybody, you know, listening already knows now, they had the little battle royal thing that they did to have a number one contender. And forget about any of the content in it. You know, most of the story was the injuries that took place. Big Show lifting up Wade Barrett, or no, I'm sorry, not Wade Barrett, but I can't remember who it was, but threw them on top of Wade Barrett. And I think it was Dolph Ziggler, throw on top of Wade Barrett and R-Truth. R-Truth takes a fall onto his tailbone. Wade Barrett dislocates his elbow, I believe it was. Dolph Ziggler lands nasty on the table. They do another spot over there. Vicky Guerrero almost gets wiped out. Kofi's got a change in midair, smacks himself up against the barricade. And then Cody Rhodes eliminates Santino on the same side of the ring where they're working at Wade Barrett, and he falls on Barrett's arm. All those referees, all that experience all out of a lot of guys that were there either in the ring or there at ringside, have you ever seen a mess like that with a whole lot of people who should know better, or was it just one of those things where it was just a general brain lock, because things like that don't usually happen?
I don't remember ever, you know, I'll tell you the truth, I couldn't tell you how many battle royals I've been in my life, but I never got hurt in one. You don't get hurt in battle royals. When I say that, I mean, you know, there's the odd accident, but you really don't. You know, and like going out on top of somebody who's already hurt, you know, that's just lack of not thinking in there. I mean, you got to, you know, things like that come up. And, well, we had decided to go out on the hard camera side of the ring. Well, guess what? Somebody's laying over there on a stretcher or something, then, you know, or whatever's going on. You switch, you know.
Well, that's obviously you go, God, you know, Cody should have known better, Santino should have known better, because they were over there, and they knew what the possibilities could have been. And by the way, Santino's cartwheel over didn't look good either. But is it in that situation in WWE, when you get the referees with their earpieces in and they're listening to words from the back, I know everybody's at blame for that because of the fact that it happened, but is there any more blame put on one side or another of somebody that should have known more to say, hey, take it
well,
to the other
side?
Well,
you know, the boys, it shouldn't really have to be, you know, at some point the micromanaging from the back has got to, I mean, they're not out there, right? I mean, they're looking at a monitor. They're seeing what which you and I are seeing, you know,
yeah.
if we're watching it at home. So they're not always in touch with what's going on out there, you know. And that, and at some point, you've got to let your officials or somebody, you know, to make some sort of decision. I mean, like, to me, in the midst of something like, of course, I've never, you know, where I've never worked in a ring where the referee had an earpiece. I mean, I've never worked a match, you know, I've been around it, but I've never actually wrestled a match in it. So, you know, where instructions were coming from the back. So, I've never been in that situation. But, I mean, under standard conditions, if in the same situation, hey, you need to throw me out. Whoops, that's the wrong side. We've got to work into something and get me out the other side. I mean, and here is part of the problem with this whole choreographed thing in the back. You know, if your mentality is that horse with blinders, that we must go through with this regardless. It's, you know, like Aries getting his finish in on the kid, you know, the kid who might have broken his neck, for God's sake. I mean,
yeah.
It's just, come on, man. You know, you make adjustments, especially in hazardous situations where somebody's health is on the line.
And especially, it's more disappointing. Well, it's extra disappointing when it comes to WWE, because talked about, you know, low key on the indies with that situation with the kid who was knocked out, still having to do the double foot stop. Talked about with TNA with Aries and Sorensen. It's like, you know, okay, at least, you know, and it shows what you have said and what a lot of people have said, Lance Storm has said, and many others of. It doesn't matter what level you're at this point right now, or how some people perceive WWE in relation to, you know, other companies or other wrestling out there, they're making the same mistakes. And that's, that's a scary proposition.
See, here's the mentality is, when I say this, I'm not a part of it, but I mean, seemingly, I guess I should say, the mentality of some of these young guys is, I have to do these things to be cool. This is what makes me. I mean, with so many pseudo teachers, trainers, whatever you want to call them, you know, there's one. I mean, in some areas, there's one on every street corner. I mean, if you look, at a directory, PWI did a directory a couple years ago of most of the independent promotions in the country, or as many as they, you know, could catalog. And one of the crazy, I mean, it's almost every place got a school. And yet, you know, there are not a lot of veterans that are teaching. So, you know, I to give you an example, I saw it, and this is off the track momentarily, but I was watching a young man who I've mentored. I didn't train him initially. He's been in a couple of my camps. Sends me some links to matches. And anyway, he was in this match, and I was critiquing the match, and I'm thinking, wow, his opponent doesn't really need, you know, or really needs a little polish too. And when he emailed me back about the critique, he said, yeah, the guy where this was taped, the guy I was working with, he's the trainer there. And I wrote back and I said, and see, here's part of the problem with the independent business. I mean, not that he's not a nice kid, not that he doesn't have respect, not that he doesn't want to be good, but you can't teach what you don't know. And who taught him? I mean, that's, you know, the lineage is, like Harley Race learned from Zabisco initially, and then through Geigel and O'Connor. I mean, I worked with Harley when he was, 18 years old, I guess. No, wait a minute, in 19. The first time. And, we had people around us like Bob Geigel and Pat O'Connor and Ricky Torres and on and on and on. That's not available anymore. So, but, you know, initially something like that happens, you make the decision to not jeopardize this guy's health, you know, or that your path is not clear to take a proper bump and maybe hurt yourself. You know, and those things shouldn't be dictated from somewhere else through a headset. I mean, it's just, you know, it should be common knowledge, common sense, common wrestling, professional wrestling sense. Anyway.
Well, and that's the problem with the show mentality now, guys not having a chance to go on the road and then learn from experience, too, because it was like a big brain freeze. You know, well, why would you knock some, you know, you see Barrett there, you see EMTs, you see this is legitimate. And for it to happen, it was just, I don't know, disappointing. That whole thing was disappointing. Now, to get away from that a little bit and go to the results of the show and our march towards WrestleMania, did you have a chance to see the show or at least hear about it as far as
you know, they're bound determined to, I mean, they make comedy such an important part of this that sometimes the real drama, the things that's really important to people in terms of spending 50 or 55 bucks on a pay-per-view, or in the case of WrestleMania, I'm sure it's going to be more than that. You know, you should, you know, it's the intrigue, the drama, the, you know, emotional investment that gets somebody to spend that kind of money, you know. And I mean, the entertainment value is important as well. But, you know, I don't know. I think a lot of this is just hokey. You know, to even worry about Teddy Long and Laurinaitis in some sort of political, I'm sure they'll have a debate too at some point. You know, I mean, that's so not even secondary, because first of all, it's meaningless in terms of making money, or suspense, or, you know, I, you know, whatever. But I mean, it's just, you know, the things that they should be featuring and focusing on. And in truth, you know, I've heard the whole argument about how guys, some of the kids in the back, you know, are mad at Rock because Rock has taken their spot. And I, you know, I told somebody today, I said, my God, that's been going on since I've been in the business. I mean,
well, The Rock doesn't also take someone's spot. They create another spot because Rock's here. So I don't know what people would really be complaining about.
Well, you know, it's about, in this case, instance, it's about business. You know, it's like I'm just citing this for example. No, just as something off the top of my head, but I mean, somebody mentioned this to me. But like, for example, in one of the first big Coliseum shows that's Fuller, that we ran when Fuller bought Southeastern from Kazana up in Knoxville, one of the big, the first Coliseum shows, we had brought in Ken Patera and Flair from Mid-Atlantic because that TV bled over into our, you know, into our area to a certain degree. So anyway, somebody on our card, I'm sure, thought, well, why are they, you know, I could have been higher on the card, or I should, but, you know, it's business, and it's, and the deal with Rock, oh, you can blame him for Survivor. You can blame him for anything you want, you know. But, I mean, that whole thing with him and Cena tag match was silly to start with and was meaningless, and they made it even more so. But, you know, overall, he's there because he's going to draw. And he shouldn't be there all the time, because then he wouldn't no longer be special. He'd still be head and shoulders in terms of being dynamic in his personality and that sort of thing over most of the roster, for Christ's sake. But, you know, in terms of fresh with the fans, he wouldn't be any more fresh than anybody else. But maybe a little, you know, Cena has more longevity in part because of the way they push him, but, you know, in part because he steps up to the occasion as well. But, yeah, that whole political thing, and if Cena's – it was one of the better Cena promos, what he did Monday night, but if –
I really liked it a lot. And, when it comes to Cena, it's just so – it's so easy. And I cannot be the only one who's seen this, where they've actually done the very handful, less than a handful of occasions. I mean, it's three times where they've actually had him – drop the comedy for a second and kick some ass, and I know he always does the toughy, you know, John Cena's angry because the Boston accent comes out, and which does, that kind of makes me laugh, and I think is a little bit corny, but I don't think people really pick up on it that much, but they respond to someone who's going to punch somebody in the face. That's, you know, they went through this whole goofy two-month storyline as a placeholder with Kane and Zack Ryder and Heave of, like, how are we going to get the fans to try to get a 50-50 reaction out of him and The Rock? It's not going to happen anyway, but the best-case scenario is you give The Rock a challenge of a John Cena who wants to really kick his ass. And it stuns me that they spent 2 months with that horrendous thing and made Eve look like a fool. Not that they did things with the women's division anyway, but it just was so, man, they've had a year, and this is where we're at right now, a month away from WrestleMania.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're right. It's Well, you know, and the whole crazy thing is, well, that yeah, the deal with they're so intent on making Cena a babyface, and what they ought to be more intent on is having a good match, is being sure that the match itself is over. You know, it's just again, if you know, I hate one of the things. If there's any such thing in my vocabulary as hate for something in the wrestling business. After almost 52 years, it would be the politics. I hate the politics. I mean, that's just, you know, gets in the way of a lot of things. But, you know, if indeed John was playing to the guys in the back, that's whatever. You know, I mean, it's just, you know, I mean, it's there's always somebody coming from, you know, use guys from, you know, like, well, in Atlanta during the war, there were guys that came in to work Friday night. And TV that we never saw the rest of the week. Now, I'm sure somebody was upset by that, but it, legitimately looking at it as business, this is a war, you know, so you're you know, loading your car with whatever you can, and if that means bringing in some people who've been seen there on TV or who were stars there in the past, then that's what you do, you know. Does it take a spot from somebody? Sure it does. You know, it's just like, Tom Brady starting a quarterback with the Patriots takes a spot away from some quarterback that's not good enough to start for the Patriots. And the fact is, you know, here's not, I mean, it's, again, it's, you know, when I say this, it's not that the kids on the WWE roster aren't good citizens, don't love their parents, don't go to, you know, I mean, it's not a personal affront. It's just they are not qualified in terms of being given the latitude to learn things that we all learned, or, you know, but the point is they can't carry the damn thing. They're not that deep. There's a few guys there that can, but overall it's not that, you know, the roster's not strong.
And I'm sorry.
And I was just going to say, and in part, that's exactly why Taker and Triple H should be the top match. Whether it will be or not, I don't know, but it should be. And in truth, in terms of mic time, in the last few weeks, Triple H has been the star of the show.
He's been awesome. Yeah, and I know a lot of people don't like, you know, what he's talking about as far as the brand and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, I obviously trust in The Undertaker and Triple H to, because you know where they're going with that. But I just, back to The Rock for a second, just if I'm a guy in the back who's bitching about the fact that Rock is there, and I can understand, you can't go up, and The Rock has always, I've heard, been gracious for the most part and things like that for the most part with his time as far as talking to guys. You know, okay, he's not there. Then I can see people being a little cheesed off about, okay, yeah, he's coming in, all the attention's on him, blah, 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 fine. But Chris Jericho's back. The Undertaker, I mean, obviously he's not there all the time, but you have guys there. I would spend more of my time, instead of being angry at The Rock, investing in those guys while they are still there. Because I'm looking around at the locker room of a bunch of guys who all kind of look the same, all kind of act the same, all have the same canned things. You know, those guys who are complaining about this should be using the Jerichos and guys like that while they're still here to their, you know, all the road agents, to their most, you know, to their fullest.
You know so what? Instead of complaining about them, learn from them.
Yeah.
In a joking manner, one time, I was working with Roy Collins in one of the Iowa towns. I don't remember. Back in '63, and we went three falls, and Roy was a tremendous ring general, and he called the whole match. He was a good heel, and we went three falls, and we had a hell of a match. We came to the back, and it was where that the fans couldn't see, so it was all right for the heels and baby faces to be in the same room. And as we round the corner, Pat O'Connor was getting ready to go to the ring, and he said to Roy, he said, how do you expect anybody to follow that? And Roy just looked up at him and said, Pat, if you can't follow it, you need to go on before it. Yeah. Which is kind of the story. I mean, it was said in jest. You know, they were just nipping at each other. But I thought, I mean, but in truth, there it is. You know, hey, I mean, let's face it. Is Cody and Daniel Bryan going to draw you a big pay-per-view buy? Tell me.
honestly, at this point, no.
No. Well, I mean, and that's the point, too. It's not, well, you know, Dragon's a hell of a worker. Okay, that's fine, but that's not even the point. You know, nobody's ever showcased that yet. I mean, it's, you know, it's been girlfriends and, you know, inadequacies and blandness.
Veganism.
And everything, but the fact he can wrestle, right? I mean, so, I mean, that, again, it's not a personal affront. I'm not, you know, I'm not slandering these guys or slamming them. But it's just no. The answer is no. You know.
No. And where the trouble comes for me, and it's where, as great as Undertaker and Triple H is, I think, you know, we've talked about this, or at least I, you know, I talked about it and brought it up last year. My only frustration is Brian and Punk. The second time they've had a good match on TV, and then they bring out Laurinaitis and Long, and they don't even stand off with each other. They get into that hokey shoving match, and Teddy walks away, and Chuck, Chuck, Durr, here we go. And that's my only problem with Triple H, where I know a lot of people say, well, he buried the locker room. No, he really, realistically, he told the truth. My only asterisk with this is, you know, he is the future of that company, and God knows I'm not there. I don't know what he does on a day-to-day basis and how much stake he has in things, but he's a part of that management team where they're not doing a good job developing guys.
Yeah,
you know, that Punk Bryan match, and I think those two matches they've had on TV show, people will still get into pro wrestling if they're given pro wrestling. They really will.
And you know, I've said all along that a strong, well, you know, like during the Monday Night Wars or you know during a promotional war or something, like any other championship, baseball, football, basketball, whatever. The roster with the most depth and the best talent, obviously, you know, if it's everything else is equal and promoted right, is going to come out the winner. And instead of bitching about this, and you're not going to learn a lot of technical stuff from Rock. What you're going to watch Rock for is timing, facials, body language. That's what you want to watch. And that's some old school stuff that Rock's got there. I mean, his rap is his rap, and he's good at it. But that's what you want to watch. You want to watch Jericho, how he manipulates, whether it's Punk, who he will still lead, because he should be the leader of that match. You know, what I mean by that is, you know, whatever's called in the ring, he will probably call, or, you know, or by protocol, that's the way it would be. You know, but... And with Taker and Hunter, that's where they belong. Because if you go back and all of you who are doubters, go back and watch last year and tell me you can have the same match. And there again, do you want to have the same match? If you do, that's fine. But if you haven't been taught pacing and timing and psychology, then you can't have it. I mean, I want to be 7 feet tall in the center for the Boston Celtics, but I can't, right? I mean, you just, you know. So learn from these guys. Watch them. Quit bitching and watch them. It's a business. You want the spot, you've got to earn the spot. You know, I've told the kids that I've trained, Mike, that I said, you know, you can be the worst worker on the worst independent show in the world this Saturday night, and yet there's somebody who wants your spot. Always look at it. I mean, which doesn't mean, you know, to go play politics. It means sharpen your game, you know, do what's necessary to make yourself the best performer you possibly can.
And these guys need to not give lip service, too, because I know everybody watches matches, and that's what I always like asking, you know, the Bob Evans and the Adam Pearces and the guys who have kind of been around for a while when they're on the show, you know, hey, those guys in the back, you know, do they listen to you? What do they say to you? You know, what do they bring up? Everybody always says the same thing. They're up there, nice guys. You know, they're trying. You know, they listen, but they just go out there and they lose it. And you hear the guys talk about, man, I watched, you know, I love watching Jericho matches, and I love watching HBK, and I grew up on him. And it's like, well, you know what? The Undertaker, HBK, Jericho, Triple H, they've all had, I don't know for how many years in a row now, over the last, what, however many WrestleManias, they've been involved in arguably the best match on each show for, you know, how long back? So it seems to me there's a lot of lip service with, you know, yes, it's great that you studied Steamboat and Savage, but if the only thing you got out of that match at WrestleMania 3 were the 29, you know, two counts, you're kind of missing it. And I hope that they actually, more of these guys actually, you know, don't just pay lip service to, you know, I'm listening and intently listening, but doing something else, because that's really the frustrating thing. But before I go off on the rails here, I don't want producer Rich Tate, who I've done a good job of not bringing up until now, yells at me to take a break. So we're going to take a short little break here and come back with a little bit more on Ringside Rap right after this.
Hi, this is Ronnie Wood of The Stones for Rad. You know it's okay to rock and roll and party, because I do it all the time. Just let someone else do the driving. That's what I do. Remember, rock lives, and you should too. Please don't drink and drive.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. But it turns out I wasn't alone.
At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of vets who've got your back. Whether it's managing the transition home or everyday stuff
like finding a nice sweater for my dog.
Sweater?
Okay, maybe not that. Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by IAVA and the Ad Council.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Red Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? That happened in Columbus on my birthday. Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
Would you like to know which teacher your kids are most likely to choose as a role model this year in school? Hey, I'm Joe Bonzo with the Oak Ridge Boys, and I can tell you, it's the person who teaches them about music, not sports or English or history, music. Surprised? Well, you shouldn't be. Music teachers have always played an important role in the lives of their students. It did with me. They help our kids tap into their natural creativity. They teach them about cooperation and self-discipline. It's a bonus that when kids have learned about scales and clefs, they find math and English concepts easier to grasp. That's because of how music education expands a young person's spatial IQ. Reading poetry or solving an equation is easier if kids know their sharps and flats. Help your kids get to know the music teacher at their school. Get them involved in music this year.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. Music, part of a sound education.
Tradition rises from the ashes.
Universal Championship Wrestling returns
Friday, February the 24th at the North Atlanta Trade Center for
live television taping with
Big Papa Pump Scott Steiner, Buff Bagwell as the NWO reunite Hijo D. Rey Mysterio, Luke Gallows and Mike Knox of the SmackDown Invasion, The Rock and Roll Express, Hot Like Lava, Johnny Fairplay of Survivor, and many more.
For tickets, visit the UCWTV.com website or the Trade Center box office.
Cards subject to change.
Hi, I'm Drew Brees, NFL quarterback for the New Orleans Saints, here with Bugs Bunny to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you fuel your body and your mind.
So what do you like to throw around the football like Drew?
Skateboard.
Play 50 in the park.
Ride a bike.
Kick the soccer ball around.
Or dance in your room.
Just move it your way.
Because nothing makes you feel better than moving every day.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
So be a player.
You'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
Move it your way and be a player.
Get up and play an hour a day, Doc. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
That's right, at letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
Thank you.
All right, we're back here on Ringside Rap. Les Thatcher along with me, Mike Sempervivi, and we're going to be joined later on by Mike Mooneyham, and then later on after that by Adam Pearce, NWA Heavyweight Champion. But, Les, for some reason the Drew Brees thing made me think about you being a, well, son of the Snyder era, a long-suffering Washington Redskins fan. The combine's taking place in Indianapolis. My son is, I think, growing up to be a Redskins fan. Know a lot of Redskins fans. RG3 or Peyton Manning? Even with the spinal stenosis, what do you do?
You know, obviously Manning is a quick fix if he's healthy. And, of course, he's not going anywhere if he's not healthy. I mean, he's going to have to pass physical and shows. I mean, nobody's going to put out that kind of money just because of his name. You know, but that would be my first call in the if you're just looking for the quick fix. But then, obviously, the other guy is young, you know, and you can build around him, that's for sure. So, you know, it'll be, you know, I don't know. But, you know, Dan Snyder's known for spending a lot of money on nothing anyway.
A lot of pundits. There are a lot of people where they talk about, God, you know, the thing about the Redskins and Peyton Manning, what you got to remember, for everybody out there that thinks about that, the Redskins' offensive line, and with Peyton Manning even wanting to put himself in that situation.
Yeah.
But
to give you something else to ponder, Mike, I was thinking, you know, when we went to break, you said, you mentioned the elusive producer of this show, Rich Tate. And I was thinking, you know, across my mind that he's just, you know, faded into the background now. He's like the mad scientist mixing the board and picking the music. And I thought, boy, does this parallel... If you, you know, recall the history of Howard Hughes, how, you know, as he became a mogul, right, that, you know, he became a recluse and, you know, and I'm wondering, can you picture Rich in that same situation?
Guy with the long fingernails and the big, long, scraggly beard sitting back there. But God, now I lost my train of thought. One of the things I did want to bring up in this segment, because we haven't had a chance to talk about it much over the last couple of weeks, I do want to bring up a couple of other Canvas Madness that's taking place. And this weekend, a unique show for the UFC taking place in a return to Japan, which could be a whole show that Dave Meltzer should do as far as why this is such a big deal as far as the UFC trying to do business in Japan. But they are returning this Saturday in a four-hour pay-per-view, which I am actually a fan of when it comes to boxing. And wrestling pay-per-views can be very long at three, but, you know, I'm fine with it as long as there's, you know, action throughout and they're structured properly. You can do 3 hours in a pay-per-view, even though many of them don't live up to that. But when it comes to boxing, to me, it was always one of those things where if you're going to air these fights on the internet or they're shown internationally with announcers anyway, you might as well give them to the people because of the cost of these things. And I'm happy the UFC is doing it coming up here this weekend. The preliminaries will be on FX again, which, Les, by the way, hopefully these shows on FX and The Ultimate Fighter, that's not screwing up any of your schedule because I know a lot of your shows will come on FX.
No, I'm interested in seeing how they package, you know, The Ultimate Fighter and so forth too. I really am. This whole thing giving you the preliminaries, hoping you'll buy the main event, or at least maybe not buy this main event, but buy the next show or something. But which is not a bad marketing ploy, but. You know, if UFC is getting the kind of money to be on FX and, you know, and on these stations, then hell, you know, giving part of the show away is a smart move. Anyway, I think they're going to create some new fans, don't you?
Absolutely, and I think that's where I have a lot of frustration with, especially when Brian Alvarez. I always throw Brian under the bus on this show, but I have to.
because it doesn't give me a chance to beat him up on Sundays. It doesn't give me the questions that will give Todd Martin and Josh Nason and guys like that, because I want to yell at him about fuel. You know, I know nobody gets fuel, and that's disappointing that people didn't get a chance to see Ellenberger and Sanchez, which was a really good fight, because just not a whole lot of places have fuel. In fact, the Major League Baseball Network is one step ahead of fuel. Actually, on the charts, it's basically the last rated major network rated, or if you can call it a major, the last rated cable network rated, at least, by Nielsen. And it's frustrating, but it's a bigger business issue, and that's what people forget about when it comes to Fox. Look, fuel has not been around that long. They put a guy in charge of fuel last year before this UFC deal went in. The whole thing is building this thing up to be a part of the carriage package and to be something to build for the future. The UFC has basically got its own network, but they're a pawn in a bigger game, so I think we don't do a good representation. I think a lot of people who talk about this, because we're stuck in the bubble over, oh, God, yeah, nobody gets to see it, and these shows suck, why did they even put them on? Look, when it comes to that one, it's a different issue. When it comes to FX, hey, anybody that complains about that, and there has been some people that do, hey, it's one of the top-rated cable networks. You get Justified and all of the shows that come on there. You know, it's a powerhouse network. This is great for the UFC. And, again, this is a long-term thing here where, you know, you get a good knockout. And the Uriah Faber pay-per-view proved this when you had the Korean Zombie. And he got into a slugfest with, and I forget who it was against now, or Leonard Garcia. That made people want to order that because it was two guys slaying each other. And, you know, who knows this coming Sunday or this coming Saturday, you know, maybe Takanori Gomi, who's known for having great firefight fights, and Kid Yamamoto, who's also known for the same thing. If they do that on FX, maybe they do pick up one or two new people. And at the very least, maybe they pick up somebody who's never seen it before that's willing to give another chance for free on network TV. So yeah. I really like these ideas.
You know, here's something, too, that you didn't mention but is true about FX is when you, like Justified and Sons of Anarchy are both for mature audiences. And what I mean by that, that's an entirely different demographic, too, than you're going to get from Spike.
Yes.
Right? I mean, it's...
Absolutely.
You know, so that's going to change your demographic to a certain degree.
Yeah, well, Spike's an 18 to 34, you know, male boy network. You know, it's toilet humor and 1,000 ways to die and all that stuff, which, you know, it has its place. So you can't fault them. They've carved out a niche. After having some failed, you know, the Nashville network and the national network, they've had some failed attempts. So they've been able to carve out a good niche with that. But as you're saying, you know, there's a reason those shows come on, because there is blue language when it comes to what most of basic cable's got. They're serious. They're what HBO transformed what a TV show could be, and
yeah,
FX
right.
has done a great job taking from that and developing these great shows that you're aimed at, and 18 to 34 has got some money to spend, but when you look at 34 to 59, I think it's 34 to 54, and you look at males, and you look at professionals, and the people that watch those shows, and who have intelligence, when you bag those people, I mean, that's what it's all about. And there's an age group there, and, you know, less you understand mixed martial arts, but a lot of people out there listening, they hit that stage of, like, 45 years old. If you're older than that, you can't comprehend it. But, you know, maybe if they can get some converts out of that and the old boxing fans, and I know people say that's impossible, but it's not impossible. It's not. And
no.
I'm really interested in The Ultimate Fighter, which is a show I haven't been interested in a while, with this new concept and the fact that they're having live fights on Friday. I think that's a really cool idea.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. Sure. It here again, it keeps their budget low too, because I mean these guys are on the show, right? I mean they're obviously paid something to be on the show, but the point is they're not high paid fighters, but they're just trying to earn that spot. So you've got Friday nights. You know, they're liable to create an audience they wouldn't have otherwise too. I mean the network as well as UFC.
Again, it's just, you know, you can get the hungry kids, and, you know, as you did with the personality profiles, especially with The Ultimate Fighter, I mean, what makes any of those shows good in the first place is you get locked into those people and how they're presented. And that's,
yeah.
You know, and again, on a station like FX, that's when it can really, I think, do its best with, you know, getting involved in the characters. I mean, hey, talk about Diego Sanchez, you know, main eventing that Fuel show. A long time ago, Diego Sanchez, why did he become the star? Because of the Ultimate Fighter.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. All right. Are they're going to keep the Ultimate Fighter in the same place? I mean, the same format? Are they changing anything?
It's pretty much the same format. You know, with these, you know, everything is essentially, to me, if I'm not mistaken, everything's pre-taped, with the exception of the final fight that takes place at the end anyway, which will be in front of a live crowd. And I can't remember if it's the Palms or not. They're basically their home building, maybe even the Hard Rock that they do these things at. But that's going to be live every week. But it's going to be a interesting craft. And I wonder, because they've always been heavy to concentrate on the drinking and the wackiness, and I know that draws in. That's what draws people into these reality shows, or the train wreck parts of it. I'm wondering if that's the only thing I'm wondering about, if they really tinker with that to just get a different image than just having the tattooed, you know, a lot of times the white guy who's just loud, obnoxious, and really drunk.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be interesting. That's for sure. What have you watched any, speaking of new networks and stuff, have you watched any WWE stuff on YouTube?
If the old matches count, then yes. I tried to give it a shot. I saw the Dolph Ziggler one, which was like, as soon as it started, it's like, boom, Tosh.0. And I remember seeing one of the other ones. I can't remember what it was. And it was instantly another TV show. And it was like, you know what? I like the originals. And I like some of these guys that are doing these shows. But this is awful. You know, it's just poor to me. It's rip-off stuff. You know, they always have, they want to be something that they're not, and the stuff they try to copy, they don't do a very good job, or they seem to sabotage it, and I wasn't impressed.
Well, that's, you know, I honestly don't get on YouTube. I mean, somebody will send me a link now and again for this, that, or the other thing, but I normally don't get on there, and I know there's a lot of my stuff's on there, but, you know, I just don't do it. But plus, I don't like watching long things on my computer, but I haven't heard anything. I mean, nobody's really slammed it, but, you know, nobody's gotten, oh, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen, or, you know.
Well, it could be
remaking or shattering or anything.
No, and it's, unfortunately, it's just that same old, you know, on The Simpsons, they go, man getting hit by football, where it's just, you know, an old man standing there and a football comes in from out of the screen, hits him in the nuts, and he falls over and end scene. And it's that sort of stuff where it's like, now, you know, I'm wondering if this, the idea of a network quietly goes away, because if this, they just have too many oars in the water, and there's just no way I can fathom them, you know, doing, especially if they're talking about doing the movie thing still, which I guess that they are. That was a surprise when I heard Dave Meltzer say that. I guess I missed them signing on with a deal with maybe New Line or something like that. And it was just like, man, if they're still trying to hold on to that pipe dream while, you know, having the troubles they're doing with just wrestling and that aspect of things, what in the world are you going to try to do with a network? And I haven't heard anybody called or anybody asked to do anything new besides that Legends House thing, which I don't even know if that's in production.
Yeah, I don't know. I just never gave that network much hope, honestly. You know, it's, especially had they have tried to launch it within the next month, like they're, you know, that was the talk initially. I thought, no, you just can't. You know, it's not like, hey, Mike, let's start a network. Okay, let's, our launch date's next week.
Yeah.
Yeah. We don't have any programming. That's all right. We'll throw a little something together.
Yeah, it's not like they even said, like, okay, we're going to do this for next year. They wanted to do it by WrestleMania,
yeah,
which obviously flopped out. And it's, you know, it's like when I hear, you know, Kevin Sullivan, I think it was Yushu, where somebody wrote in a question. They asked him about, would you start with, you know, a company, and it's always been, you know, Paulie especially, when it comes up, like when Paul Heyman returned to wrestling to start a company or any of that stuff, it's like TV networks the same way. Unless you have a whole lot of money to spend and a whole lot of thought to put into it, you know,
yeah, yeah.
It's not something you want to venture into.
What do you think about your boy Russo not being with Impact anymore?
That's, you know, when the Ring Cock King thing, when it only lasted for a couple of weeks as far as what they were going to tape and everything, it's like, and nothing was ever said about Dave Lagana, and Bruce Pritchard, you know, had already been, you know, had already been said, it's been changing roles. It was like, I would wonder if this is the end of Vince Russo, but obviously he's got the friendship with Jeff Jarrett, which may not matter in the grand scheme of things, but Dixie Carter, for whatever reason, really liked him. I will never believe it, and it's wrestling anyway. I will never believe that he won't be back until...
Again, I don't know the man. I have no issues, personal issues with him, except that he's tried to screw up my business that I love and I work hard at. I'm sure there's a few positive things he's done, but for the most part, yes, he had a big hand in killing WCW, whether he likes it or he didn't. And part of the reason that TNA or Impact or whatever the current name is where it's at is in part, because of some of the silly crap that he wrote. I mean, I'm sorry. I'm brilliant with the Comedy Channel.
Well, and it's just, for as much as she liked him, it's like, you know what? I never want to see him back just because let's give somebody else the shot, truly, because what else? You've said it about TNA a zillion times over the years, but you go, God, what else do they have to lose at this point to get him out of there and put somebody, obviously, because he didn't work out. And I know that the 1.3 million viewers and all that stuff, but you know what? At the end of the day, only 8,000 of them are buying your pay-per-views, and that 0.5% or whatever it is. I mean, that conversion rate is just, it's just unacceptable. Yeah. It would be unacceptable to me.
Well, I think it'd be unacceptable to most marketing people that, study that sort of thing, I would think. But anyway, yeah. Well, and here's the other thing, too. Someone made this comparison. Oh, I don't know when I heard it, but they were saying that, look, on free TV, it means something, and yet it means nothing because it's free, right? I mean, you got nothing else to do on Thursday night. But this guy, I forget who it was, but the comparison was, he said, hey, I watch Dog the Bounty Hunter. It's free. If I got nothing else going on, I might watch it. He said, now, if you tell me it's going to cost me $30 or $35 to watch it, I'm not going to watch it. It fills some time for me, and I find it humorous or interesting or intriguing or whatever the case may be, but it's not worth buying,
Yeah, and
that's the product they've created, I think.
Well, and I know we're going to be running up on a break here, in about 5 minutes or so, but this just made me think of when, and I know this is going to be too complex to get into in such a short period of time, but when it came to you promoting your average show and then your bigger shows, what were you looking on return on investment as far as the publicity you did with ticket sales? Is there a short way you could kind of describe that?
Wow. No, I mean, honestly, not really.
Sorry.
And I wasn't a guy to sit down and crunch numbers. I always had somebody around me that, that was one of the things that producing television, hey, I need this. Hey, it's not in the budget. Well, hey, try to get it in the budget, right? I need, that sort of thing. But, of course, part of that depends on like the Pillman thing, we had so much free publicity, and it became such a, like an event, you come to the, we had some people that came every year from out of town, it was an event. So, that's the thing too, is it's hard. Now, I didn't get to go to ROH's show here last week. I had clients late and they could not make it. But anyway, I don't know how, I've heard different reports about what they did, but now I assume there were posters out. I never saw any. But you're talking about Cincinnati, a huge metropolitan area, so posters are only serve so much. I don't know what kind of ratings the TV was getting, you know. So, and they didn't bring in a full load of ROH guys. They used several local guys and some guys out of Ring of Honor, out of OVW. So
yeah, which you know, and to me, it's like. I don't know if the onus, because I kind of heard that about posters and things like that. You know, the onus is on both in that situation. You know, ROH to make sure OVW can get that stuff out there and say, hey, you know, you guys are going to get, you know, that obviously. I guess there was disappointment that you know the whole roster of ROH wasn't brought, but it's like you know, I don't think people realize too. Sometimes it's like you know that's not the position ROH is in. But, you know, whoever they thought they were going to see, hey, guys in OVW, they're going to end up seeing you, and that's good. And, hopefully, you know, things like that are alleviated, and it's a learning experience, or the crowd is pretty good.
Here's my problem. You know, I didn't know what, I saw, you know, on their TV show, they announced a couple of the, obviously the top matches. And on one of the commercials, Corny said, well, you know, I used to visit my aunt, whatever her name was, across the river there in Covington. He said, and I go over to the old Cincinnati Gardens and see some of those old guys like Bobo Brazil and Les Thatcher. And I thought, okay, I got you.
Well, you know what? Good revenge came, and because we're up against a break here, Les, but, you know, good revenge came for you in a different karmatic way when Jerry Jarrett came out and said, you know what? Vince Russo is now gone from TNA. Now he'll finally get the opportunity, and I'm breaking this news now, to go up to ROH and work with Jimmy Cornette.
I read that and I laughed. I thought, yeah, cool.
Now, Les, I know you got to go pretty soon here, but can you hold on with us through this break until Mike Mooneyham comes on, because we've got a little old school topic to discuss with you when we come back.
Okay, sure.
All right, we'll be right back on Ringside Wrap.
Georgia wrestling fans, you're going to want to make your plans to be at Johnny G's the first, third, and fifth Sunday of every month, 2 p.m. bell time, for Rampage Pro Wrestling television taping. And fans, if you're in Middle Georgia, make sure that you watch Rampage Pro Wrestling on Fox 24, Saturday 9 a.m. on the My 41.2, Saturday at 10 p.m. Cox Communications Cable, Thursday 8, Saturday at noon, and of course, Rampage Rewind, the one-half-hour show on Cox Communications throughout the schedule. Fans, be there.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Red Gunkel or Gordon Soley? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? What happened in Columbus on my birthday? Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
This is Miss Rachel from The Empire, formerly known as Platinum Championship Wrestling. Every Friday night, The Empire presents the best in professional wrestling at the Academy Theater in Avondale State. We're also at the Masquerade every month or so. Check us out on Facebook. Just look for Platinum Championship Wrestling. And you'll get the latest details on all the hottest action from The Empire, formerly known as Platinum Championship Wrestling. We get it. That's every Friday night at the Academy Theater and at the Masquerade as well every month. We'll see you there.
All right, we're back here on Ringside Wrap, Mike Sempervivi. Well, God, I said I was going to do that. Les Thatcher with me, Mike Sempervivi. And Mike Mooneyham is going to be joining us here in a little bit, and going to let Les go. But a topic for a little kind of an old school topic. Usually we try to take it back to the old school here a little bit towards the end of the show, and since Les is going out with us, a little bit of a different way to do it tonight in that. Les, I got to ask you, when it comes to old school, we throw the term gets thrown around out there all the time, and, you know, I'm of the age, being 36 years old here very shortly in a couple of days, and, you know, I'm always one of those people who have the new tradition of the cutoff point of old school for me is around 84 and then back before the, you know, WWF and Vince McMahon kind of blew through things. But when it comes to you, what do you consider old school, and what do you consider, you know, the final cutoff point where we should say, hey, it changed? Was it TBS? Because I know a lot of people in Georgia say when satellite came in, that was it. So what do you think?
Yeah, I think, you know, a little bit, all that contributed, but I think during the war, there was still, old school. You know, to me, psychology, telling a story, trying to get people to emotionally invest in what you're doing, that's, you know, as somebody else said, not necessarily old way, new way, but the right way. But, I guess you consider it old school because, as we were talking about earlier, it's not something that's commonly done any longer. So, maybe Smokey was the last holdout, you know, in terms of anything of major consequence. I can't really say today that I find Ring of Honor, you know, to be traditional. I mean, it's closer than, you know, not necessarily. Randy Orton is close to, you know, what you might call traditional. But I think the cutoff was back when at the end of the war was that, you know, pretty much the drum roll and the finale.
That's what, you know, I know Rich is one of the people, and actually Adam Summers, who I do a show with, is his kind of, you know, their ideas kind of go towards when Jim Crockett sold to Turner, and it, you know, kind of went from JCP over to Turner and Turner Home Entertainment and all that sort of stuff. That was the era then, too, which, you know, that Don Owen, I think Don Owen was still around then, and there was still Dennis Corluzzo was running in New Jersey, and there were guys in certain places, but that was kind of, it ended up not being the same. I guess Jim Crockett had at Dallas for a while, too, and it just, you know, it kind of burned out for him there. It's kind of funny. I guess it's like music stations where it surprises me. I always made fun of the fact because I grew up in the era where rap music began, Run DMC and all that sort of stuff, where I could never fathom there being an oldies channel that would play rap music or an oldies channel that would play rock and roll from the, you know, Guns N' Roses and stuff like that. Now on classic channels, that's exactly where they are, which is, hey, it's kind of bizarre. It's kind of bizarre, and it's, you know, it's where you got to be careful because people looking back at history will think that this is the way it should be, and looking at this era now, hopefully some of that changes a little bit.
Yeah, well, you know, I think the business has come, especially with the corporate and the big, you know, the TV thing being more important actually than the house shows and that sort of thing. I mean, not that TV wasn't always important, but now it's a bigger attraction than the house shows, you know. But, you know, the business has changed. You can say say whatever you want, but not in terms of its, the artistic value of it, it hasn't changed for the better. Is it more athletic, more aerial based? Yes, you know, and all the above. But it's, but you're also right now in recent months seeing the result of that, and it's not at all a positive result.
Because,
you know, there's no way to, you know, with the elimination of the territories completely, there was no place to learn. You know, I mean, again, you can go to schools, but like I said earlier, you know, how many legitimate teachers are there? You know, I obviously there's more. I can't say, well, I got, you know, I can count them on my hands and my fingers and have fingers left over. I don't know that I can do that, but there's, you know, there's not a lot. I mean, guys who legitimately have the background at that level, you know, so it's, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, see, in WWE, kind of, you know, for all their feelings, I'm not saying they've lucked into it, and, you know, before you go to it, I'm sure you're pleased with the fact that Shawn Michaels doesn't look like he is going to be involved in this. Didn't think they needed Shawn Michaels to be involved in it.
No. That would have just weakened it.
Yeah, that's, to me, it's a waste. And, again, it's, hey, look, I know this is going to sound terrible to say, but something you could use next year if you want to use Shawn Michaels in, and obviously probably won't be Triple H again at that point. I think they'd be pushing it too far. But, you know, they've walked out Rock, Cena, which will be special for its own reason. Daniel Bryan and Sheamus, you know, who knows, but Undertaker, Triple H, and CM Punk, Chris Jericho, at least if there's some positive, it's got that. I'm not sure. Is Mike Mooneyham, are you on yet? Oh, nope, not on yet. Sorry about that. But,
that's,
you know,
right.
We've been talking about over the last couple weeks, too, and this is going to drive, you know, it's been driving Rich nuts talking about Tim Hornbaker's book. we've tried to do it over the last couple of weeks. NWA, National Wrestling Alliance, The Untold Story of the Monopoly that Strangled Pro Wrestling. We're going to be talking about that with Mike a little bit later on. But, Les, I don't think you ever had a chance to actually go through it and talk about what you had thought of the book in a little bit.
I thought it was tremendously interesting. I've been around some of the people involved historically. I mean, Al Haft was one of the biggest promoters in the country, and that's who ran Cincinnati from the time I started going to the matches until Barnett. Doyle came in opposition to Haft in the late 50s, but I had a vested interest actually, you know, in reading it because I'd worked for a lot of the promoters and, you know, been a part of that. So I thought it was well done.
Is it the amount?
You'll have to go back and read certain parts over again just to be sure you understood who screwed who and how.
Well, that was one of the amazing parts with me, at least for me, was, you know, the monopoly charge from the government, and then the lawsuit with Denval Tinky George and Sonny Myers against the NWA, or Sonny Myers against Tinky George in the NWA, which, you know, the amount of detail that was put into that and all of the records, to me, it's a incredibly important book to get a hold of. And online right now, Mike Mooneyham, and won't be long-winded. Mike, how are you?
Doing great.
Michael, how you doing, kid?
Hey, Les, ready to make the hot tag, Bubba.
All right, brother. Good.
I'm a host in peril.
I stole for Semper Vizi this last hour, so I'm tagging you. You know, you come in and kick his ass here, okay?
We'll clear house.
Listen, guys, I'm going to take off. I wish you guys could be coming to Mobile this next weekend, too.
Me, too. I'd love to. I just, scheduling hang-ups, but hopefully next year for sure.
Well, I will see you in Charlotte.
You absolutely will. And please tell Cowboy Bob and all the guys in Mobile, you know, I said hello.
I will do that. And Michael Semper Vizi, I won't talk to you next week. I'll be on the road, but I'll get back with you guys in a couple weeks. And Mooneyham, behave yourself and take care of this guy, okay? Don't listen to anything he tells you. It's all
safe travels, Les.
I'll see you guys later.
Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All right, Les. Thank you. And, again, hey, terrible introduction by me, Charleston Post Courier. The man, Mike Mooneyham. Mike, again, how are you? And obviously, you heard us talking about Tim Hornbaker's book, and I've been wanting to talk about this. You know, Rich has wanted me to talk about this book now for a while.
Yeah.
Especially now that Tim's got the new book coming out as well, and I'll touch on that a little bit later. The National Wrestling Alliance book, obviously, you're very familiar with it. I think you wrote a column on it when it came out. Talk about the book a little bit for kind of a encapsulated form for those who haven't read it, and because there were so many great revelations in it and things that were researched and interesting, as a guy that's been around this and talked to a lot of people and knows a lot of things for a long time, what surprised you out of it?
I really love that book. It was just such rich history, and what really was so fascinating about the book is all of the documents that were uncovered, most of which I had never laid my eyes on before. I mean, it was just some remarkable stuff, and it's a long book, but I tell you, it's a book that you can, you'll put down and you'll pick it up over and over and over again. And I don't know much about Tim's next book. What is that going to be about exactly?
That is, I gotta pull up the name of it. I believe it's the Legends of Pro Wrestling, which is kind of taking a look from the turn of the century on. You know, now more prevalent of this. I don't know if you've seen. Have you seen the oh god, it's not wrestling classics. Oh god, I can't believe I'm brain logging. I talk about it every week. But the his new website, which he's kind of doing as an addendum to the book, the National Wrestling Alliance book.
No, I have not, but I definitely will check it out.
Yeah, I'm trying to pull it up here, and of course, you know, I'm not going to be able to do this in a good fashion, so I may have to do it after the break here. I'll find out the name of it, but yeah, he's actually using the site to basically preserve pro wrestling and putting a lot of documents and things like that up there, but then also making additions or changes to the book when it comes to, like, talking about the Baltimore area and the Philadelphia area where, you know, Pedro Martinez, when he was promoting shows, the guys in Baltimore and Philadelphia were happy. Under Toots Mott, they had troubles and things started to go down, and this is when the government was looking at the NWA, and he was able to add some things to that on the webpage. So, again, of course, I'm doing him no justice right now, but...
it sounds very interesting, you know, anything to do with the preservation of professional wrestling, I'm all for.
Chokehold, when it came out, I know Dave Meltzer did a big write-up on it when the book's first written. I talked to Rich Tate about it where I was working at the time to get his perspective on the deal. You know, in a way, the books couldn't be any more different because, you know, for the most part, even though there's stories in there and people's perspectives, Tim's book is dealing with more black and white facts where obviously Jim Wilson had a lot of documents that were revealed for the first time through his lawsuits and through his due diligence research that he had to do for those suits, and Walton Johnson did as well. They seem to be books that, no matter what anybody can say to me, are handcuffed, because Chokehold is a book that, you know, I say people need to read, you know, but also with the asterisks of, hey, you know, this is written from one side of a guy that a lot of people say is completely full of it. What do you think about that one?
You know, I tended to give Jim Wilson a lot more credit than many folks seem to do. I never really believed the bit about Jim Barnett actually wanting to put, you know, he may have told Jim that he was going to put the world title on him, but I think Barnett probably said that to more than one wrestler back then. But, you know, Jim, I talked to Jim for countless hours over the years, and he really, you know, had some very interesting things to say, and I, you know, tend to believe that a lot of the stuff he said was true, you know, in regards to NWA promoters using political clout and strong-arm tactics and threatening to cancel permits and, you know, things like that. I mean, let's face it, it was a pretty tough business back then, and, you know, I don't know if Jim was as good of a wrestler as he thought he might have been, but he did. I really think he made some valid points about the cutthroat business tactics that were used back then.
Well, is that that seems to be the biggest thing that everybody kind of latched onto was obviously the claims, you know, the Tommy Rich thing, and that he was, you know, come on to, and that's the reason he was blackballed the whole nine yards. And, you know, it seems to be that he was a very smart guy, and you know, as far as intelligence goes, and again, good football player in the whole nine yards, but just was one of those guys, and I'm not going to say, I don't want to compare him to Goldberg as far as Goldberg being the new example of this, but it's like, he seemed to never kind of get it. Like, he knew where he was supposed to be and where he thought he should have been established, and well, it makes sense, I want to win, I'm a champion, I want to do these things, and I want to rip my head open with a blade. Goldberg actually had those same reservations, if I'm not mistaken.
You know, Michael, that's excellent point, comparing him to Goldberg. Goldberg had a lot of those same reservations when he came into the business.
And it's, you know, it wouldn't sound in an insulting way to either man, their situations aren't quite the same, but it almost that same mentality of...
Yeah.
Wait, isn't this the way it's supposed to be? And he'd look at, I'm sure, looked at the Ernie Ladd of that era, and Koloff and Graham, but it's not the Ernie Ladd who came from his sport, was doing things his way, and then thought he was doing them the same way and never really got it.
Yeah. Goldberg was a lot like that. I remember having a conversation fairly early in his career. You know, he had a pretty good win streak going on, and he was being influenced a lot by Hulk Hogan. And I don't want to say I smartened him up on some things, but he made a few comments that, you know, I could read into those comments that he was being worked pretty good by Hulk. And I asked him, I said, Bill, did you ever consider that this might be going on instead of this? And he said, well, no, I never really thought about it. And almost during the course of one conversation, I could almost feel his opinions changing about a lot of things, you know. And I told him a little bit more. And, you know, by the time we finished speaking, he was saying, well, you know, I don't know if I can believe the Hulk's drawn anything now.
Now,
and it was just so funny. But, yeah, I think he needed to be smartened up quite a bit. He kind of, you know, in a way, it was almost like he believed that the business wasn't a work, and he was buying into his own press clippings.
A sheltered system that he kind of came up through there. And,
yeah.
Like even the Don Fries and Bob, I don't even think he even got a look from WWE. He wasn't even one of those guys who was talked about at that time. But I know we're getting up here on break, and the guy that we can all believe in and trust, well, except for Colt Cabana, NWA World Heavyweight Champion Adam Pearce is going to be joining us here right after the break, so we will be right back.
This is Reba McEntire for RAD. You know, I see a lot of funny things traveling all over this beautiful country of ours, but one thing that's not very funny is when someone gets in a car trying to drive when they're drunk. Take their keys away from them, because friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
In 1977, in Johannesburg, South Africa, an 8-year-old boy picked up the game of golf from his father. By the age of 9, he was already outplaying him. The odds of that same boy then making it to the U.S. and European pro golf tours? 1 in 7 million. The odds of the Big Easy winning the Open Championship once and the U.S. Open Championship twice? 1 in 780 million. The odds of this professional golfer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. Ernie Els encourages you to learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? That happened in Columbus on my birthday. Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
Tradition rises from the ashes.
Hi, this is Al Jarreau. First of all, let me tell you how much I love teachers,
North Atlanta Trade Center
School. I
have a
special
invitation with
big
Scott Steiner, Buff Bagwell, the NWO Reunited Show, D. Ray Mysterio, Luke Gallows, and Mike Knox of the SmackDown Invasion, the Rock'n'Roll Express, Hot Like Lava, Johnny Fairplay of Survivor, and many more.
To a birthday party. Mrs. Gunn is looking around at her kindergarten class and wondering who's singing Harmony.
To be a good father is the most important job in a man's life. But
anyhow,
it doesn't have to be
so
hard.
Wonderful, those memories.
Play
and
catch.
Important in
go to a park or visit a zoo.
For the music that
help
I
your
now,
child
get
with
love
their homework.
Music and meet
sit
very,
down
very
together
early.
For dinner. Ask them how their day was.
Brought to you by MENC,
things get busy,
the National
and sometimes we all
music
fall
education,
short.
And
but
the
smallest
Anthem
moments
Project,
can have
the
campaign
to restore America's voice
life.
Through music education.
Take time to be a dad.
Music,
today.
Part of a sound education.
Learn more
education.
At 1-877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.com. Brought to you by
Friday, February the 24th at the North Atlanta Trade Center. Scott Steiner, Buck Backlund, the NWO, Reunite, Ego, D-Ray Mysterio, Luke Gallows, and Hot Thompson, Smackdown Invasion, The Rock and Roll Express, Hot Wife Lava, Johnny Fairplay of Survivor, and Pink Floyd.
To be a good father is the most important job in a man's life. But it doesn't have to be hard. Play catch. Go to a park or visit a zoo. Help your child with their homework. Sit down together for dinner. Ask them how their day was. Things get busy, and sometimes we all fall short. But the smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 1-877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
All right, we're back here on Ringside Wrap. I am Mike Sempervivi along with Mike Mooneyham, and joining us at this time, NWA World Heavyweight Champion Adam Pearce. Mr. Pearce, haven't had a chance to talk to you and be on the show in a while. How are you?
I'm good, guys. Thanks for having me. How's everybody doing?
Doing great. Hi, Adam.
No complaints whatsoever, except for one little thing. You know, I just, you know, as upset as I was that I didn't get a chance to stand next to Heather Lynn and give her a big hug and take a picture with her, you've seemed to anger some people because everyone's favorite, the Art of Wrestling podcast and everyone's favorite comedian and wrestler extraordinaire Colt Cabana, you laid him out the last NWA Hollywood show. What happened there?
It's been a long time coming, man, and as I've been fond of saying the last couple of weeks, only the dead have seen the end of the war. And as anyone who's followed the careers of both myself and Colt Cabana will tell you and can attest, our love, and at one time it was a deep love, has turned into a very rich and powerful hate, and that never died. I've been waiting for the right moment, the right time to strike since he defeated me for the NWA World Heavyweight Championship about a year ago, almost exactly, March the 6th of 2011, and it just so happened that the right moment presented itself, and that's what champions do. They take advantage of the moment when the moment is there.
Now, the thing is, though, I mean, he got it back. He got the title back. I saw you with the kids in Illinois. I've seen all these things you're doing. You have traveled all over the place. You've been in Germany. You are the hardest working champion out there. You got the belt back. I mean, Why?
I mean, here's the thing, man. I didn't get the belt back from who I should have taken it from. I never got the opportunity to face Cabana one-on-one. I never got the opportunity to right the wrongs that he perpetrated against me because here's the facts. People don't realize that on March 6th of 2011, I was not medically cleared to even be in a ring. I should have never been in there to begin with, and if it weren't for the National Wrestling Alliance forcing me into a situation that no mortal man should have had to been in, this championship would have never left my ways. And Cabana, the person that I've known for literally half of my life, knew the physical state that I was in, knew that my medical situation was less than stellar, to be perfectly understated. And at any point during the duration there, could have said to the National Wrestling Alliance, look, I want Pierce better and more than any man on planet Earth, but I don't want to become champion this way. And rather than be a man, he went along for the ride, and he took the championship from somebody who was less than 50%, and that has been the tantamount to the biggest disrespect I've ever faced in my life. And again, righting the wrongs that he's perpetrated. It's taken a year, but it's got to be done. It's got to be done right. And you know what? Championship or not, this is a hell of a lot more. This runs deeper than any title chase. This is definitely more than business, and at this point, it's even more than personal.
I'm not saying Colt Cabana, you know, told me anything, but, you know, and thank God Mike Mooneyham's here, too, because, you know, being a wrestling historian, You know, that now I'm not saying that, you know, it was a Dory Funk Jr. situation, falling off the horse and just couldn't make it to see Briscoe, but you weren't playing that injury up at all, were you?
Are you kidding me right now?
Well, that's maybe, you know, Colt thought maybe a little overstated in that. I mean, really, I mean, where do you plan on getting this? Are you going for wrestling revenge here? I mean, when are we going to see you and Colt Cabana? Because, I mean, you know, are we going to see this in the ring, or is this just going to be something where you're going for full revenge?
You know, I'm still taken aback by the fact that you would question me. Let me just bring you up to speed,
because
I've lived under a rock. Don't interrupt me. Don't talk when I'm talking. You have asked me to be a guest on your program, so sit there and listen, Toots, and let me bring you up to speed. Colt Cabana knew full well that February 12th of 2011, I was dropped on my head, suffered a compressed vertebrae, severely sprained neck, and a crushed brachial plexus on my right side. If you aren't aware, and this is 100% legitimate, I didn't feel my right arm, a good portion of my right upper torso, for almost 6 months after that injury. So don't question me and assume or placate me or poke fun into thinking that I overstated something that was probably, without question, the most serious injury that I've ever dealt with. I have children, I have a family, I have multiple mortgages, and I had to get in the ring, and that's what I did. So no, the injury wasn't overstated. Yes, Cabana knew full and well what he was getting into, and he simply took advantage of a situation, and I'm going to beat him into the ground for it.
Now, it took... if I'm not mistaken, I mean, how long was it before you got the full feeling back and didn't have nerve problems? The reason I bring that up, too, obviously, the situation with Jesse Sorensen is a completely different one, but we talked to Matt McMurray last week, and we talked about injuries that take place and the severity of the injury that he had. You had a severely sprained neck, and is all the feeling completely back or just back enough?
If I was going to put a number on it, honestly, I would say I'm 97% of where I was. And again, I'm not a doctor. I've done everything that they've asked me to do from a physical therapy standpoint. And just speaking seriously now about this, that crushed nerve bundle really was as close to paralysis as I ever want to get. And they thought I had a broken neck, and God, thank God, it wasn't. Severely sprained, as I mentioned. Everything was compressed in there, C3, C4, C5, which everybody knows is the danger zone. And it took me a good 4 months from March of 2011 till July when I came back to action to really feel normal again. And even today I have very intermittent and very spaced out periods of what I call dullness in my right shoulder. I used to have tingling down my right arm, and that subsided, thank God. But the nerves were damaged, and from what I understand in terms of injuries like this, nerves either regenerate or they don't. And after the fact, now here we are a year later, I still from time to time will have, you know, what I call dullness. I'll have some really, really faint numbness that I really don't notice unless someone was to bump into me or poke me or if the shower was too hot. And the likelihood is that I'll have that for the rest of my life. So you'll never notice it. If you met me or you interacted with me, you'd never have any idea today that I had the kind of neurological trauma that I did a year ago. But it's still there, and it will be.
Now, I'll shut up here in a minute, let Mike ask some questions, but because, you know, we talked to Bob Evans and talked to him a lot, and it's, you know, to me, I think he gets penalized for not being 21 years old. You know, you've been penalized, frankly, for not being 21 years old in this business.
Sure.
At least, I think so, at least. Was there, knowing that you're going to have to go back out there and hump and hustle the way that you do and work the schedule that you do, and again, having kids, having all of that stuff, how much pause did you have in coming back, or was there even a doubt of just like, you know what, the hell with all of this, it doesn't matter, this is still what I am and what I do?
You know, I mean, there was a great deal of that, just being honest, and I think as a man, I'm comfortable enough with my own ego to admit that the last thing that I was going to let any doctor do was take me away from what I love doing. That said, as you mentioned, I've got all of these other things that frankly are more important than wrestling going on in my life with children and a family, et cetera. And it took me, you know, when the injury happened initially, I thought I was done. And then, you know, the macho bravado kind of kicks in a little bit, and I wanted to see if I could at least come back. But, and I want to be serious when I say this, too. The promoters and the fans that have gotten behind me in this tour, what I'm calling the One Last Ride tour, this thing has surpassed my wildest expectations. I had no idea. Here we are about a year later that I would be on the road as much as I am, working as often as I am, in as varied places as I am. I mean, it's the international exposure has been ridiculous for me. It's a humongous blessing, definitely one that's taken its toll on me physically, but emotionally I think it's probably as cathartic a thing as I've ever done in my life, and something I'm really humbled by and grateful for. And that's as truthful about that as I can be.
Mike?
Hey, Adam, you've actually been in this business for a lot longer than most people might think.
Mm-hmm.
What is it, like 15 or 16 years now?
I broke in November of 95.
Okay, so you've been in it 11 years. Okay, I knew you'd been around for
11.
A while. Do you still have any aspirations of maybe working with WWE or TNA?
You know... First, let me back up a second. November 95 would mean that I'm just starting my 17th year. Yeah,
17,
so
okay. Well, you mentioned 11, and then, okay, well, yeah, let me do my math here. But, yeah that's
November 95. It's a long time.
That's an awful long time. Do you have any aspirations of working with WWE or TNA? And if you do, how come you're not there already, a guy like with your talent?
You know, I'd love, I think the easy and the smart answer is to say yes. To that, although I got to be realistic about what I've been through in the last couple of years, having been under contract to Ring of Honor from late 2005 to August of 2010,
mm-hmm.
I immediately sent feelers out after the fact once I had clearance to do so in terms of trying to see what was available in terms of work,
mm-hmm.
whether it be in the ring or otherwise with both companies,
mm-hmm.
and frankly got some feedback that I didn't expect. And had some feelers, and without going into great detail, because I caught some flack last week for saying this,
mm-hmm.
I thought, going back probably about 6 months ago, what year is this? 2012. I thought at the end of 2010, so right before Christmas, that I would be in FCW and developmental. And I'm not. And the information that I was given was that it was directly related to my age, and an acclimation to a WWE style of working, and by the time I would be, quote, TV ready, that the powers that be in charge of not only developmental but television production felt that due to my age, that my shelf life and whatnot, that they wouldn't see a return on the investment they were willing to put in me.
Wow.
And for that reason, any overtures that were extended to me were rescinded. And,
well, they're lost. They're lost.
Well, I mean, on one hand, I can look at that and, you know, in the conversations that I had with the people I was dealing with, I can understand
mm-hmm.
where they were coming from if it were someone who had never wrestled before and had to be first trained.
Sure.
And trained the WWE way and then molded and then given a gimmick and then seasoned and then become TV ready and go through that whole thing. But my argument was, you know, I mean, how long am I in Florida for, realistically, before you know whether or not you're going to use me on TV? Is it 6 months? Is it a year? Is it 2 years? And you know, just that unknown from the company standpoint was too much to bear, considering, you know, by the time I potentially would make it to TV, I'd be 35 or 36 years old. And, you know, I can understand, to a degree, I understand that.
Well, I still think, I mean, you know, you deliver the goods and you would be ready to go at any time. I mean, you could work that style. It wouldn't take you, I wouldn't think it would take you long at all to adjust whatever they wanted you to do. But it seemed like you might have a little support in the office now or with guys who have a little more influence, you know, like CM Punk and a few of the guys are sort of breaking that through that glass ceiling now.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, in a perfect world, you would think, you know, and I don't know, you know, I've got friends in TNA too. So, I mean, it's all about time and place and what's needed when and are you available and do you fit the bill they're looking for? I mean, it's the same old song and dance, and I don't at any point want to seem like I'm coming across embittered in any way because I'm not.
Yeah.
You know, I've had a hell of a run and I've been lucky enough to have done the things I've done and carve out a small niche in this business without having worked in either place full time, and I think that's something to be respected. I certainly am grateful for my time.
Yeah, I just finished an interview with a young guy who works mainly in the Southeast, based here in South Carolina. And I think he's got a lot of potential, and I was wondering if you had worked with him before or knew of him. His name is John Schuyler.
I've heard the name. I don't know that we've ever been in the ring together. In fact, I don't think we have. Is he part of a tag team?
He teamed a little bit with Brad Kane, Lodi. Had a gimmick down here, but he's a really solid guy with a great attitude. You know, a 24-year-old guy, an example of someone who has really only been in the business for 4 years, but the kind of guy who has worked his way, done anything asked of him, and good style, good appearance. You know, really is a guy who I think could probably make it. He's hungry. And,
sure.
You know, and you see a lot of guys like that right now. But honestly, you know, you gave an example of yourself, someone who has done everything asked of them on the independent scene, worked his way up, Ring of Honor, NWA. You know, what does it take nowadays to really get to the, when you say the big leagues of WWE or even TNA, you know, what does it take now? I mean, you know, obviously you don't have to have that prototypical chisel physique that Vince wanted for all of those years. But it seems like a lot of hit-and-miss stuff. You have to be in the right place at the right time. You know, what is it that those guys are looking for?
You know, that's a great question. And having been a booker for a somewhat major company for a while and been in a position to have to evaluate talent and fill needs, that's really what I think it comes down to. I mean, your bosses or your company, you identify a hole or identify something that you want to build upon, and you find people who fit that bill.
Yeah.
And there are 100 other guys that maybe don't exactly fit that bill but fit a different bill. But if you're not looking for that particular thing at that particular time, you overlook them. And I was as guilty as that as anybody else in that position. And I really, honest to God, feel that that's basically what it boils down to. If the guy is in the right place at the right time, with the right skills, with the right look, there you go. But it's to a point now where you've got WWE and you've got TNA, and if you want to include Ring of Honor in there and say there's your top three or your three-tiered attack in terms of professional wrestling in our country, full-time spots even combined between, you know, and with including all three companies are not very many. So I think we're really looking at a situation where, and this is a perfect argument for why the territory system was as great as it was all those years.
Oh, yeah.
It not only gave people a chance to become seasoned professionals and work with different people under different styles, but it also allowed people to make a living in the business in a much bigger way than it is today. And for the guys out there working without benefits, without insurance, without 401k, without any type of medical benefit or anything like that, it's a very difficult situation. And I feel fortunate to be able to work a full-time schedule the way I do. I think I'm probably one of, you know, 12 or 15 guys who are willing to make that sacrifice and actually can do it and make enough money to survive. And I certainly wouldn't be able to do that without my wife. It's crazy.
Yeah. Well, I sure admire you for carrying the torch because, you know, there's so few of you out there who really kind of make it a fairly good living and working in the wrestling business without, you know, working under contract for someone like WWE or TNA. It's very admirable.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be the first to admit, man, I miss working for Ring of Honor, if only for the steady paycheck every 2 weeks and my medical benefits. You know what I mean? That was humongous. You take that for granted when it's not there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, to piggyback that too, you know, you talk about the tour name and everything, and knowing that at some point, you know, the hanging up the tights and leaving your boots is going to be something you have to do. But because of the mind you have, because of the experiences that you've had, do you ever think about, you know, maybe, okay, you don't get to WWE or TNA as a performer, but as a road agent, as a trainer, as a help for OVW and Danny Day, it's something. What do you think about that, and is that something that you're planning on doing and to continue on with?
You know, that was part of what my pitch was to both companies coming out of Ring of Honor was, hey, I don't necessarily need to be on camera. Or to even go a step further, I don't even necessarily need to be a, quote, wrestler. If anybody had aspirations or wanted to take a shot at doing a manager role or even color commentary, I think in a lot of ways I'm perfect for that type of role. Mm-hmm. And the other things you mentioned, road agent, training, those are the things that I really love doing anyway, trying to get into the nuts and bolts of the actual wrestling itself, getting kind of away from putting storylines down on paper because that's so subjective to begin with anyway. It's just ideas, you know what I mean? But to actually get in there and the mechanics of what works and, more importantly, why, I've always been that guy. I'm in love with that aspect of the business. The part that is about evoking emotion from a group of people who even now today know what we're doing is quote-unquote fixed or quote-unquote scripted and still being able to get them to give it real and genuine emotional response even when they know what they're seeing isn't real, quote-unquote, I think that's a gift, and I'd love to be able to pass that on in some way.
Well, you'll have a job forever.
Yeah. Well, so far...
That's so good.
Now, as far as your current schedule right now, obviously you're taking bookings and going around. If anybody actually wanted to get up with you and to book you, and I know because you do, and it's not a joke, you are a hell of a traveler. And I don't, you know, honestly, before I even ask, how many people log the miles that you're logging right now? Because you talked about, you know, the fail of the territorial system. You know, guys lost the ability to go around and travel and bend people's ears and do that sort of thing. Now, I know you probably have to do a lot more solo traveling and things like that, but
sure.
Your experiences along the way, just life experiences that you pick up, are you one of the most heavily traveled guys out there right now?
I'd have to think so, man. I mean, last week I was off last Saturday, and it was the first Saturday I was off in 15 weeks. So, I mean, I'm out there, you know what I mean? And off the top of my head, I think of guys like Luke Gallows and obviously Colt Cabana, who's out there, and he's probably the biggest hustler of all of us, but it really is a hustle. And just staying out there, I think, speaks to the hard work that the guys are able to do. You do good business, you treat people the right way, and more importantly, you're able to get fans to pay X number of dollars to come and buy a ticket when you're in town, and that keeps you busy. But yeah, man, I mean, I'm proud of that. I'm proud of the fact that I'm out there. I'm proud of the fact that the National Wrestling Alliance has seen fit to give me this championship four times, and I hope that history remembers me as the guy who did it like Harley, and the guy that did it like Jack Briscoe, and the guy that did it like Rick before WCW, because that's exactly what I'm trying to do, give it the respect that I think it deserves. And I'd like to think I do a good job.
You certainly do, Adam. Were there any guys that you emulated when you were, you know, coming up, growing up, watching wrestling, and any guys you said, hey, I'd love to work like those guys?
You know, man, the funny part about me is I grew up a wrestling fan, but I never, from youth, said I want to be a professional wrestler, and that was my dream. And I have to be honest and admit that wasn't me. I wanted to play football. That's all I cared about. That was my love.
Right.
And falling into wrestling has been, outside of my family, the biggest blessing that I've ever had in my life. But just looking back on it, I grew up in Chicago.
Uh-huh.
I loved guys like Bobby Heenan and Nick Bockwinkel, who I watched on AWA.
Oh, yeah.
Yet. And Bobby Heenan is still like my idol to this day. People, when I was a little chunkier and I was wearing the one strap singlet, people always assumed that was for Jerry Lawler. No, I wore that because Bobby Heenan wore that. And, you know, obviously the robes are an homage to Ric Flair and whatnot. But, you know, I would never say that I patterned myself after one guy.
Yeah.
The comparison I'm getting a lot of lately, and I got this most recently probably from Tommy Dreamer, is that he said, you remind me of Steve Austin before he was Stone Cold.
Uh-huh.
I'll take that as a huge compliment.
Oh, yeah.
Austin is awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, you had some physical difficulties back when in high school.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of what took me out of playing football. I suffered from acute muscular compartment syndrome between my junior and senior seasons, which, you know, I'm not a doctor and I don't want to go into medical specifics because I'm sure I'll mess it up. But basically, for the listeners, your calves are made up of four muscle groups surrounded by one membrane. When you have compartment syndrome, the muscle groups, the compartments grow, but the membrane doesn't. And if you have a bad enough case, what happens is those fibers will reach a point to that membrane when it won't stretch any longer, and then they start to implode.
Wow.
And that causes, I can tell you, I remember the feeling today like it was when I was 16, 17 years old.
Oh.
It's excruciating.
Oh.
And if it's bad enough, it becomes gangrenous, and you end up having your legs amputated. Oh. And thank God they caught it early with me.
Yeah.
I was diagnosed on a Thursday and in surgery on a Monday and learned how to walk all over again after that.
Wow.
You know, that as physical as that sounds, it was a much, for an adolescent, again, 17 years old, 16 and a half, 17 years old, it took much more of a toll on me emotionally than it did physically because, you know, having to cope with, I thought I was going to play Division I football.
Yeah, and that's pretty much ruled that out.
That wiped that out in a heartbeat. Yeah.
Wow. Well, you did go on to another really good career, so, you know.
I have no complaints.
Yeah.
Well, that's the wrestling aspect about it. We were talking about, you know, Tim Hornbeaker's book earlier on, the history of the NWA, the untold story of the monopoly of strangled pro wrestling, you know, obviously this show, you know, a lot of Georgia people listen to it, but really, you know, it's a lot of, you know, the older guys out there and the people who, you know, were either made the history or are big parts about studying, you know, big fans of studying history. You know, where do you fall on that? Because obviously you talk about a lot of the respect. You talk about, you know, you hope you're looked at in a place like Harley and you've had a chance to travel and go to Japan and go to places. When it comes to, you know, reading about wrestling, and you know, it comes into just the general history of pro wrestling that a lot of, you know, people lust after, you know, like me, for example, where do you fall on that scale? Are you a vociferous, you know, historian when it comes to reading and getting access to different things, or is it just more of a casual thing?
No, I mean, I would say I probably fall somewhere in the middle of those two extremes. I have read the book that you're talking about, and I read a lot when I'm on the road, especially wrestling-oriented books, because I do like to know about, you know, the people that blaze the trails that we currently kind of ride on. So, to answer your question, though, I have no idea. I mean, I've always kind of been one of these people that I think legacies are kind of, how do you want to say, legacies are kind of written by the people and the fans that experience the performances firsthand. I mean, I can tell you that I have zero control over what fans will think of me down the line. I mean, I can control emotions to a certain degree when I'm in the ring to the fan who's there that night, but I have no idea. I just would hope, for me, just knowing how hard I've worked, that even if history doesn't look favorably upon the National Wrestling Alliance post Jim Crockett Promotions, that it will at least give credit to those who tried.
Yeah.
Now, Adam, I'm going to be wrapping up here shortly with you. Thank you for coming on. You know, I did bring up that picture of you standing there with Heather Lynn at the NWA Hollywood tapings, but also the other guy there, Eric Watts, who probably most of the people listening haven't seen or really heard from necessarily since his stint on Tough Enough, where he had a very up-and-down performance from coming in there a little bit out of shape and the ups and downs that he had. And obviously standing there with him, what do you think about him, and as far as, you know, how much he's improved since Tough Enough, and what's it like to be around him? Because obviously Matt Cross was on there, and he got a very small glimpse. Obviously, you know, we got a glimpse of different things, but we got a very small glimpse of what these guys were or what they are really about.
Right.
So much you can sit in a half-hour TV show. What did we miss about Eric Watts, and where is he at this point in his career?
I think the tough enough experience for him overall, particularly how everything was portrayed on television, is the best thing that ever happened for his wrestling career. And let me clarify that and kind of qualify it by saying, keep in mind that Tough Enough, as you said, was a humongous experience for these people that were put on the show to try and live out their dream and forge a way to the WWE, but that was cut down to 30-minute programs with the sole purpose of that 30 minutes to be an entertainment vehicle. So the way that the producers and the people who put the show together in post cut everything up and then put it on television was specifically to paint people into a role that people watching the program would identify with. And to a certain degree, while I think some of the criticisms of Eric going into the show were valid, I don't think him being out of shape necessarily was one of them. I think that was something that was super, super overplayed and played on top of just for entertainment purposes more than it being a reality. This guy is 6'6", 260 pounds. He doesn't have a whole lot of fat on his frame. But what I think he had going into Toughen Up was kind of an attitude issue. And I think he needed to be broken down to a certain degree, and I can't think of better people than Steve Austin and Bill DeMott and Booker T to be able to do that. And I think he learned a lot about himself and what he really wants out of the wrestling business, because to know him is to know his family situation and the fact that he cares for family members with disabilities. And this is someone who I think is 100% a humble person, but more than that, he's a man. And I feel bad for the way that the producers chose to portray him on the television show, but I think that he comes out better for it at the end. And he has made leaps and bounds, and he will continue to do so.
Now, for people that want to see him, people that want to see you, they can get a chance to do that through NWA Hollywood, which is online, NWA Championship Wrestling from Hollywood. Obviously, you know, it's on TV on a couple stations out in California. It's available online. Get a little bit of the older crowd here. What would be the reason that they want to tune in, with WWE being the way they are, with TNA, being the way they are and burning people out, especially the people that listen to this show? Why would they want to give NWA Championship Wrestling a shot? Why would the older wrestling fan, what makes them want to come back to see this show?
Without even giving my opinion, let me just give you some cold hard numbers that I think will paint the picture for you. 2 weeks ago on the program, which airs on Saturday nights, or I guess technically Sunday mornings at 1 o'clock, but a lot of people DVR this on KDOC Channel 56 in L.A., the program did a 2.0 at that time slot on a Saturday night in Los Angeles, our second largest market in the country.
Wow.
Of that 2.0, the largest age group that turns into our program on KDOC is over the age of 50. So that it means there's a lot of middle-aged and above people staying up to 1 o'clock in the morning or DVRing the program. But the point that I think that makes is it's wrestling as wrestling was done during a time period where people of that age group would have fallen in love with it.
Yeah.
And it's very much simple storyline, wrestling broken down to its basic tenets, good versus evil, fighting for championships. And, of course, there's a little sizzle that goes with that steak, but I think dollars to donuts, the 44 minutes that you get of every hour that the program's on the air, of course, 16 minutes of that is commercials, but of the 44 minutes, the grand majority of that is actual in-ring wrestling, and I think that's what people want to see. And there is a segment of wrestling fans out there who obviously are tuning into that, and I'm proud to be a part of the program. It's been on for now going on 16 months in Los Angeles, and I think that's a credit to David Marquez and the boys who put that on, and, of course, our good partners at KDOC-TV in Los Angeles. And it's wrestling, and again, I'm biased because I'm on the program, but to me it's wrestling as wrestling should be.
Adam, what do you got here coming up? I know you'll be in St. Louis soon and Fort Lauderdale in March, but what do you got coming up here for people to look out for?
The next month of mine is going to be crazy. This weekend I'm in Chicago for Pile Entertainment in Elk Grove Village, myself versus Chris Cairo in a cage for the NWA World title. The week after that I head to Australia, which I'm excited for, my first time down under. I'm there for 10 days. I'll be back in the States for a couple of events, potentially in Mexico between the 11th and the 18th, and then I go on a nice little tour of Canada again for about 8 days. And then, as you mentioned, at the end of the month, I've got Fort Lauderdale, Battle of the Belts, which is NWA Ring Warriors. And then the week before that, I'm actually up in Portland, Oregon, for the NWA West Coast Wrestling Connection. So it's crazy. I'm all over the globe, and I won't complain about it. It's a blessing, and my frequent flyer miles are getting there.
Well, when you're in Chicago, smack Dr. Keith Lipinski for me. I think he stole my iPod one time. But, Adam, I want to thank you so much for coming on here and joining Mike and I. And look forward to having you on again when your schedule when you can make time to be on. Best of wishes to you, and I'm glad everything's going well for you, man.
Hey, I really appreciate you guys having me on, and I enjoy the program, and it's nice to talk with people who have the same similar passion about the wrestling business that I do.
Nice talking to you, Adam. Best of luck to you.
God bless you, gentlemen. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
You too. We'll be right back on Ringside Wrap.
Georgia wrestling fans, you're going to want to make your plans to be at Johnny G's the first, third, and fifth Sunday of every month, 2 p.m. bell time, for Rampage Pro Wrestling television taping. And fans, if you're in Middle Georgia, make sure that you watch Rampage Pro Wrestling on Fox 24, Saturday 9 a.m. on the My 41.2, Saturday at 10 p.m. Cox Communications Cable, Thursday 8, Saturday at noon, and of course, Rampage Rewind, the one-half-hour show on Cox Communications throughout the schedule. Fans, be there.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Soley? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? What happened in Columbus on my birthday? Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
This is Miss Rachel from The Empire, formerly known as Platinum Champions of Wrestling. Every Friday night, The Empire presents the best in professional wrestling at the Academy Theater in Avondale State. We're also at the Masquerade every month or so. Check us out on Facebook. Just look for Platinum Champions of Wrestling, and you'll get the latest details on all the hottest action from The Empire, formerly known as Platinum Champions of Wrestling.
We get it. That's every Friday night at the Academy Theater and at the Masquerade as well every month. We'll see you there.
All right, we're back here on Ringside Wrap. Mike Sempervivi along with Mike Mooneyham. And Mike, I like using this term, and I have a feeling that interview could be said it started K-Fabulous.
Ah, yes, absolutely.
Hey, speaking of that, and God, I know I can talk and suck all of the air out of the room, I would be very wrong if I didn't bring up a thank you to you for posting on your Facebook some of the things that you post, including some of the pictures, bringing up the 40-year anniversary of the death of Luther Lindsay, which, you know, it's not like I'm thinking about it in everyday life, so it's, you know, I'm happy you brought that up because it's a good reminder on some things. And, you know, your post, I think it was Sunday, about Slick.
Yeah.
The son of Rufus R. Jones. I had kind of heard, like, really loose things of that, but I never even thought to look into it or anything like that, outside of just knowing he and Sapphire and a couple people had come from Kansas City.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know that, and I know a couple other people had no clue about it either, so.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things where it's not talked a lot about in the business and, you know, even in other circles as well, but yeah, you know, for a long time, it was sort of known that it was claimed that he was Rufus's adopted son, but a little more to it than that. And
well, you know, I couldn't have believed it. It's because, you know, Slick had lateral movement,
which Rufus didn't quite, you know, but you got to know the R did stand for guts.
That's exactly right. Now, we got about 7 minutes to go here before we wrap it up, but what are you working on, or what's coming next for you as far as what we're going to see in the paper?
Well, as I
or in the paper, God, I'm stuck in a different era, or online.
Yeah, well, you know, there's always something. I'm on Facebook and I'm on Twitter, by Mike Mooneyham, the by being sort of more, you know, relevant to my newspaper job, but it's by Mike Mooneyham on Twitter. You know, I've found that Twitter attracts a lot of the younger people. I don't know, are you on Twitter?
I am on Twitter, and Les Thatcher is not, if that says anything.
Well, that's what I mean. You know, you don't see a lot of old school guys on Twitter. I see a lot of young folks and stuff, and you know, it seems like Facebook is geared a little more toward, you know, less in my generation, our generation. So you know, it's sort of a nice divide there. But yes, I'm on Twitter and Facebook. And my column every Sunday in the Post and Courier. You know, we try to keep that old school flame burning myself.
Of course, Les does as well. And, you know, if anybody wants to get up with him and contact him, you can do so at Les@epwt.com. And just go to epwt.com or lesthatcher.com to see that. I also want to mention RingsideRap.com, which obviously you know about because you're listening to the show right now, and GWH Tweets on Twitter, and of course, yeah, the moneymaker, the originator, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. You know, like when it comes to old school, and obviously GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com started, you know, with the preservation of Georgia history.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and by the way, just for the record, it's Legacy of Wrestling is the website, LegacyOfWrestling.com. And the book is Legends of Pro Wrestling, 150
okay.
Years of Headlocks, Body Slams, and Pile Drivers that Tim Hornbaker's got, and I definitely invite everybody to check that out. But in the last couple of minutes here we have, when it comes to cutting off and talking about old school,
mm-hmm.
where is it for you? For me, I'm part of that new tradition that says 85. I know some people say actually the Turner sale, some people say TBS in 79. There's a lot of different theories. What do you think the cutoff for old school is?
You know, I usually cut it off with the 88, the sale of the old NWA to Turner, even though I can understand how you could cut it off a little bit earlier. You know, I go back a good ways. I started watching this stuff back in the early 60s, so, you know, that's sort of my favorite period in wrestling. But, you know, we've seen a lot of changes, but I think... you know, for me, it was sort of when Crockett sold to Turner. That was sort of it, you know, sort of that line of demarcation for me.
Mike, you are, and I hate to even put myself in this when it comes to, you know, epic people like Rich Tate, but more so yourself and Les Thatcher, that, you know, we always talk about the Beatles and you know, being like the Beatles here on this show. We call Bob Evans the fifth Beatle, and some people didn't know why, and that's because you are truly the fourth Beatle here. And I hate to break this to you, though, even though you are the fourth Beatle, even though I love you to death and I love seeing everything that you do, next week Bob's going to be here, and he's bringing Maria Kanellis.
I'm afraid I'll have to defer to that.
That's now
I'll gladly slide out of the way. I understand.
In competition for this, I mean, the next time you're on, who can you bring to the table?
I don't know. I'll have to think about that.
As long as they look like Maria Kanellis, I'm fine with it.
One thing I want to add real quick too is come fall, wrestling's greatest icons will be coming out, and I think a lot of people will like that.
Ooh, now what's the situation with that? Because I think I've missed that.
It's Greg Oliver, Steve Johnson, and myself. It's the latest in a series.
pro wrestling's greatest heels, pro wrestling's
greatest tag teams, yes.
So this will be pro wrestling's greatest icons. It's really going to be a fabulous read if I say so myself.
Mostly due to
Steve and Greg, but they produce some really good stuff.
That's fantastic. And, you know, I don't think we ever gave a thank you to Greg and all those guys, too, because in the heels book, I know our interview with Guido Mongol from way, way, way back in the day when it was Georgia mm-hmm. Wrestling was still just in newsletter form in Peach State
mm-hmm.
Pandemonium.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you to them for that. And, oh, by the way, speaking of Peach State Pandemonium, can't forget about Mike Norris, Jerry Oates, and Bobby Simmons tomorrow night. They had a run of great guests, Bob Armstrong. Well, almost all their guests are great. But tomorrow night, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that Bo James and Bill Dundee will be on with them. So they've got about a minute to go here. And again, Mike, I really want to thank you for coming on here tonight. And
pleasure,
hopefully
Mike.
I didn't talk too much for you and just stamp you into the ground here.
I enjoyed every word of it.
And by the way, also, thank you for not channeling Georgia Wrestling back in the day and changed my last name to something along the lines of Dale Veazey.
You're quite welcome.
And the reason I can get that shot on Les is because he's not here right now, so no one tell him either. So for Rich State Hideout in the production studio, for Les, for Adam Pierce, and of course for Mike Mooneyham and myself, thank you all very much for joining us, and we will talk to you again next week.
Listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.